And stay tuned for Juneau Afternoon. We'll hear from chefs about their thoughts on Alaska salmon. We'll get a preview of Tekla Waterfield's music performances this weekend at Rockwell. And we'll hear about art happenings in Juneau during Arts Up. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more, that's on a Juneau Afternoon next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Certain stocks of wild Alaskan shellfish have been in decline over the past few years, and their future is uncertain, say scientists. This week, we've reported on shellfish hatcheries, which researchers say are at risk of becoming unsustainable by 2040 because of ocean acidification. Today, KBBI's Shady Grove Oliver looks at the future of wild shellfish.
Do wild coastal shellfish face the same 25-year end date that Alaskan hatcheries do?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the million-dollar question right there is, can organisms evolve quickly enough to compensate for that change?
Gretchen Hoffman is a leading scientist in the field of genetic adaptability. She says rapid evolution can happen in general, but not necessarily for all breeds of organisms. That's of particular concern to Alaska Native communities that have relied on specific types of wild clams and other shellfish for generations as a food source. Jeff Hetrick is the owner of Aleutic Pride Shellfish Hatchery, where the study took place. Like many local residents, he's noticed a serious decline in certain shellfish populations in south-central Alaska.
Well, absolutely. I don't think that we're going to lose the wild stocks. You basically lost the wild stocks. They're really hard to come by. It's difficult for us to even get the brood stock to produce in the hatchery. You know, there's a razor clam issue, and people are aware of that on the peninsula, but especially in Lower Cook Inlet and Homer area, little neck clams, butter clams, cockles, they're hard to find. It's been a decline now for the past decade.
Hoffman says some of the urchin divers she works with on the California coast have noticed similar years with very poor harvest numbers. She says there haven't been enough studies to make a definite correlation with acidification yet, but it's something scientists and locals are thinking about.
We're going to try to find out whether the ocean chemistry has anything to do with it looking ahead.
Monitoring continues at Aleutic Pride to do just that. In Homer, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
Tomorrow, we'll conclude our week-long series looking at ongoing studies and the future of acidification research. The Fond du Lac Band in Minnesota could see improved broadband internet access in the near future, thanks to recent grants by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Dan Huckelack from WGZS has more.
Cell phone and internet access is slow and spotty at best for many in and around the Fond du Lac community. The Northeast Service Cooperative will receive two grants totaling $6 million and will partner with the band on improving internet access. Fond du Lac Planning Director Jason Holliday discussed what the two grants will mean for the band.
A lot more connectivity. The whole reservation is very underserved, and it's a great opportunity for people to be able to connect to high-speed internet, possibly gigabit-speed internet, at their homes, and they'll help with their education, economic development. If they're an entrepreneur, they can run a business from their home then. Home health care in terms of health benefits for people coming that can't get to a doctor, you know, nurses and nurses' aides can come to them. Emergency services will help a lot, too. It'd be a great opportunity for everybody involved.
Since 2009, the USDA has awarded more than $77 million in Community Connect grants to build broadband projects in rural areas that previously did not have broadband service. Nearly $20 million of those funds were dedicated to provide broadband service to tribal or Alaska Native communities. For National Native News, I'm Dan Huckelack.
Red Lake Nation members will decide if alcohol will be allowed at two of its casinos. A referendum vote is scheduled for next month. The Minnesota tribe has three casinos. One is located on the reservation. No alcohol is served at any of Red Lake casinos. The vote would not allow alcohol on the reservation or the casino located there. The tribe has considered the alcohol issue for businesses in the past. Tribal members living off the reservation can vote absentee. Polls will be open on the reservation August 19th. The U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs passed the Indian Trust Asset Reform Act Wednesday. The bill provides for Indian Trust asset management reform within the Department of the Interior. Committee Chair Senator John Barrasso says the legislation will give tribes the authority to better manage their own trust assets. The bill now advances to the full Senate. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. With funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Support by United Tribes Technical College, offering courses online for a career in medical coding and for updating your current coding certification. Registration available through August 10th online at uttc.edu.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome to a Juneau Afternoon. I'm Lori Scandling with Jeff Brown on the board on a Thursday afternoon, taking a quick look at weather. Tonight, showers with lows around 52, and tomorrow, numerous showers with highs around 58. Friday, mostly cloudy with some improvement to scattered showers, which is the forecast also for Saturday. Glad you're here, and in our studio this afternoon, we have three guests, Bo Schooler, who is the chef at the Rookery Restaurant locally, David Varley, a chef at the Seattle Restaurant, RN74, and Jill Weitz, who is with Salmon Without Borders. Welcome. Glad to have you here. We're going to be talking about a dinner that is sold out. I should clarify that right now. But a dinner that will be held this evening, hosted at the Silver Bow Inn, to raise awareness of issues that may pertain to salmon across borders. So first, I want to know, whose idea was the dinner? Bo, did you cook this up? No pun intended.
Yeah, so it kind of spawned out of I had been contacting...
I know. What do you mean for that? It's terrible.
I've been contacting chefs down in the States about coming up and doing dinners, purely just from a standpoint of kind of having fun working with other chefs, because we're so remote. I don't really get to, you know, there's not a lot of people in town that we can really work with. So it was fun to try and get some kind of high-powered guys up here to do a dinner with. And then a few of them actually could come at the same time. And I realized that with all this attention that's kind of on Alaska right now with reality TV shows and whatnot, that I could grab some of that misguided attention really and focus on real Alaskan issues with the draw that these guys have in the food world. And that really pertaining to like our greatest natural resource, which I think is the fisheries here, because that really affects everything on a local level.
But were these chefs that you... know personally, or that you pursued because of their reputation? And tell us who all is here and where they're from.
So we have David from Seattle, and then we have Richie Nakano. He's from San Francisco. And then we have Ryan LaShane, and he's from Houston. He's originally from Winnipeg, but he's been down in Houston the last little while.
And how did you decide that these were colleagues that you wanted to invite to Juneau to prepare a meal?
Well, I actually invited quite a few people, but I hadn't really gotten around to it until kind of in the spring, and it was just short notice for a lot of people. So these are the ones that really could make it on such short notice.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd actually contacted quite a few people, and a lot of them really are interested, so hopefully we can turn it into kind of a bigger thing next year and just keep rolling with it.
And were these other chefs who you knew or were referred to you?
Just like through the internet, you mm-hmm. know, social media, and kind of mutual respect of what each other was doing, so to speak.
So, David, you work at the restaurant RN74 in Seattle, and you've traveled to Alaska before. Talk a little bit about that and why you decided to come up here for the Juneau event.
Well, for me, this event is really special because when I found out it was an Alaska seafood event, that's a no-brainer for me. I've been serving Alaska seafood since I started cooking. And it's something that I think is a really special thing, and I want to have a deeper understanding of the fisheries, the politics behind it, how that product makes it from the region to my kitchen, so I can tell a better story to my guests, and I can represent the product with authenticity as opposed to just you know, I just pick up the phone or order it, and, you know, here it is. But that I can actually represent the product and represent the level of quality with my message, which is that, you know, we in our restaurant group, we've got multiple restaurants, and we really love Alaskan seafood. So it's really important for me to have an understanding of it and the people that are behind it and the drivers, the economic drivers and other other important factors.
This isn't the first time you've come to Alaska to check out the natural seafood product. Tell us about a couple of other times that you've looked at, I say, the origin of some of the food that is served.
Absolutely. Well, I like to follow products back to their roots, and that sort of led me to Norton Sound, Nome, Alaska, a few years ago for the red king crab season. They had a red king crab fishery in the summer. Which is a really, really interesting fishery. They also fish them through the ice in the winter, which is, that's a lot of work. And, you know, the length that people are willing to go to harvest these products. And then, you know, the product being, you know, the partnership with Alaska Airlines to get product, fresh product out of Alaska into chefs' hands, you know, it's unprecedented, and it's everybody working really hard together to do that. So that was really exciting for me to come up here and see that. I also spent time in Alaska recreational fishing. I'm really into fishing for anadromous fish, steelhead salmon, and I think the conservation of the resource, when we talk about, you know, some of the threats that these products are facing, it's all largely due to habitat degradation, and I think that, you know, the salmon, you know, Jill's program is really interesting in that, you know, they're looking at it holistically. Like, we tend to lose sight of the fact that, you know, we have this huge ocean that's, you know, we perceive to be full of fish, and what we don't realize is those fish need the rivers, they need the headwaters, and it's a very thin strip of water, and without that, they cease to exist. And this resource that the region is so deeply tied to historically, and is also tied to financially, you know, we're talking about people's way of life, is very dependent on a very thin strip of water flowing off the side of a mountain in many cases. And there's a lot of things that are threatening that. And we've certainly seen the result. I'm very familiar with it in Washington, Oregon, California, where those resources have been pushed to their limits, and, you know, we see salmon, steelhead stocks crashing all around us in the Pacific Northwest, and it's a real tragedy. And whatever we can do and whatever I can do to support the people that are making the right decisions for these fisheries here, whether it's be it financially or adding a voice, something that I'm very interested in.
Thank you. Jill, talk about the organization Salmon Beyond Borders. It was born a year ago. What is its purpose, and how is it connected to this dinner featuring the chefs from the Lower 48?
Sure. Thanks, Lori. As you mentioned, Salmon Beyond Borders came into existence about a year ago, a little over a year ago. It's a campaign that represents commercial and sport fishermen, businesses, tribes, local governments, kind of the whole spectrum of Southeast Alaska as it relates to protecting our water quality and fisheries. We've had quite the year of activity in trying to raise awareness to this issue. There are more than 10 large-scale open-pit mines that are in different stages of development in the headwaters of the Taku, Stikine, and Unik watersheds. Most recently, things have been flying through, and when I say flying through, I mean permits going out the door for projects within the Stikine. Red Chris mine was just open for operation, and we're actually hosting an event this weekend, or helping host an event this weekend in Wrangell for a blessing of the Stikine following the anniversary of the Mount Polly Dam failure in BC that occurred last summer about this time of year on August 4th. So we've been doing a lot of work to raise awareness to the issue of water quality and protecting our way of life and these types of things. But a simple component of that is our food, right? And we, as these guys have both mentioned, kind of just take for granted that it's a resource that we find always to be there to sustain us throughout throughout the winter and throughout the summer and all these things. And so it's just been a really cool way to get involved with the rookery and bow in particular, just to help raise awareness like to this issue, but like the basic sustaining food that we all enjoy. It's been an exciting and different way for the campaign to kind of help support the message. Absolutely.
So, Bo, is the intent to raise the message with chefs who are not Alaskan? I'm guessing that the folks who have bought the 60-plus tickets for the dinner tonight are probably already pretty familiar with the issue and support it, meaning that you might not be raising awareness among that group. They might be well-informed. So is the point then to inform the external chefs?
Yeah, it's to broaden the reach of these issues. Like she mentioned, the Mount Polley disaster, it was just a year ago and they're already open. And it's ridiculous. It kind of, I see these mines as kind of like this faceless entity out there, and everybody here knows fishermen, or they know people that work at the processors, or they know people that work in the restaurants selling the fish. Like, the fishing industry affects us on the local level. And so everybody here knows about these incidents and the kind of issues at hand. So to bring up these chefs from the States that can reach out to the people that live in their area, it kind of expands the awareness of the issues that we have.
So the awareness is really targeting folks back in an area served by, say, David's Restaurant or the other two gentlemen from Houston and
yeah.
San Francisco.
Well, as part of it is like, you know, Richie from San Francisco, he already got an email from Vice Magazine to do a photo gallery about his trip. So these guys are watched by the media in a sense. And so it was a way to kind of, I know that if they come here, people are going to wonder, why are these guys in Alaska? And they can say, well, I'm here because Alaska has got some issues with their fisheries and we need to help protect this. So that was my intent of bringing outside chefs instead of just doing it with local guys, because then the message probably would have just stayed here in Alaska.
Understood. Jill, have any of Alaska fisheries actually been damaged by any of the mine work over the border in BC? Or is the organization with which you work something that is vigilant about that and monitoring it? I guess my question is, has there actually been damage? I'm aware of the Mount Polley breach a year ago.
Sure.
Talk a little bit about the reality of that. Is this just a threat that we're afraid of, or is it something that we have already had to deal with?
Yeah, Lori, that's a great question. Just to clarify, Mount Polley did not fail into a transboundary river, though it did breach into the Fraser River, which most of us here in this region are aware of as it's one of the largest salmon-producing rivers in British Columbia. And that's part of the issue, is the fact that there has been ongoing acid mine drainage from the Tulsqua Chief Mine up the Taku River for the last 50 years. There's been a lack of oversight by the Canadian government in regulating that. But the awareness that we're trying to raise to this issue is that it's not an anti-mining campaign. This issue is great because we don't have any baseline water quality data. We don't know the quality of these watersheds, these rivers, and it might be too late. There might be ongoing acid mine drainage from these projects that are even in the early stages of exploration. So we're working to help the tribes and actually our state and federal governments are very interested right now in finding funding and figuring out how to establish these baseline water quality data projects throughout the whole region, actually. And that's one great first step, absolutely, is to establish those baseline data sets so that we can have enforceable protections down the line.
So this is a precautionary approach in order to understand what the effects are. If I hear you correctly, you can't measure the effects if you don't have some fundamental data about the health of those systems as they currently stand.
Absolutely. And following the Mount Polley dam failure, there was a geotechnical report that came out, which was full of a ton of information that we can glean from that unfortunate event. But one of the most telling statistics that we take away from that report is that this type of tailings structure, this wet tailings facility, if Canada continues to permit types of storage facilities, it's two dam failures every 10 years. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when, just because of the environmental components where you're storing wet tailings in a very wet, rugged, steep environment. It's just kind of mind-boggling, actually. So, there's that potential there. Absolutely, this is precautionary, but it's also very real.
Thank you. David, do you or Bo expect any kind of national coverage? You mentioned Vice Magazine contacting Richie. Do you see other, media coverage or offshoots of your visit besides informing your customers about what you've learned about Alaska salmon?
Well, for me, I'm consistently being asked by media in the lower 48 about, sort of some of my purchasing decisions, why I buy certain products, what I'm excited about, or what I'm concerned about. Chefs, people, when chefs talk, people listen nowadays, especially when it's regarding our food and our, where we're getting our product and what our value systems are about those products. We all have a soapbox at this point, which is pretty interesting. So I want to make sure that I can make the most informed have the most informed commentary regarding sort of the strengths and weaknesses of these foods and what, where our threats are.
Bo, you're a chef here in Juneau. Have you found any challenges in making your decisions about purchasing seafood here? Or are we experiencing a healthy seafood system as you know it as a consumer of that and someone through which other people consume the product?
Here on my level, no. I mean, we have a very direct and close relationship with the processors and the fishermen, and so it's pretty easy for me to get my hands on quality product and have it readily available, but that's me working with close relations with the people that are pulling the fish out of the water. So I don't know exactly how the market appears to others down south. Maybe they're seeing less fish or less quality, but here I'm still seeing great product.
But you have confidence in what Alaska is able to produce at this time?
Oh, no doubt, yeah. I think we have some of the best seafood in the world. It's top notch.
And that's what's bringing everybody together about tonight's dinner.
Yeah.
So let's take a moment. What's on the menu? Who designed the menu, and what will folks be eating tonight?
So everyone's doing one or two courses. I'm doing a course with Jacob Picard. He's kind of the head meat guy over at Panhandle Provisions. So we're doing a seafood charcuterie, so all your typical cured meats and sausages that you would see made out of pork or beef, we're doing with crab, cod, halibut, salmon, stuff like that. Richie is doing a lightly cured sockeye, and he's doing a chawanmushi, which is a Japanese steamed egg custard. Make a fold in bits of fish. Then we have Mark Wheeler from Copa is supplying a rhubarb and local seaweed sorbet, and then he has a smoked black cod ice cream. My baker, Melvin Cristobal, is handling a dessert course where he's using dehydrated spot prawn heads, baking them into like little macaroons. It's kind of a crazy dish, but it really works.
For sure.
Yeah, it's really good.
I can't wait.
And then the main course will be a barbecued Dungeness crab. We just picked up a bunch of live Dungeness crab this morning, straight from Glacier Seafoods. And then David is handling a shellfish pasta course, which looks just great.
I'm a foodie and I'm hungry.
Good.
Thank you for all coming together in this effort. It sounds like the word has certainly gotten around if you're sold out tonight. And it sounds like it will be a vehicle for raising awareness about maintaining the health of Alaska salmon, which we all value. So thanks for dropping by today. Have a fun evening.
Thank you.
Thank you,
thanks, guys. Thanks for having us.
Ma chère mademoiselle. It is with deepest pride and greatest pleasure that we welcome you tonight. And now, we invite you to relax. Let us pull up a chair as the dining room proudly presents your dinner. Be our guest. Be our guest. Put our service to the test. Tie your napkin round your neck, Sherry, and we provide the rest. Soup du jour, hot hors d'oeuvre. Why, we only live to serve. Try the gray stuff. It's delicious. Don't believe me? Ask the dishes. They can sing, they can dance. After all, miss, this is France. And a dinner here is never second best. Go on, unfold your menu, take a glance, and then you'll be our guest. We our guest, be our guest. Beef ragu, cheese souffle, pie and pudding on flambé. We'll prepare and serve with flair a culinary cabaret. You're alone and you're scared, but the banquet's all prepared. No one's gloomy or complaining while the flatware's entertaining. We tell jokes, I do tricks with my fellow candlesticks.
Put it all in perfect taste that you can bear.
Come on and lift your glass, you've won your own free pass. Be our guest. If you're stressed, it's fine dining we suggest. Be our guest, be our guest, be our guest. Life is so unnerving for a servant who's not serving. He's not whole without a soul to wait upon. Ah, those good old days when we were useful. Suddenly those good old days are gone. 10 years we've been rusting, needing so much more than dusting, needing exercise, a chance to use our skills. Most days we just lay around the castle. Flappy, fat, and lazy, you walked in and oops-a-daisy!
It's a guest, thanks for love, and I'll be blessed. Once important, thank the Lord, I've had the napkins freshly pressed. With this food, she'll watch me, and my dear, that's fine with me. While the cups do this, I'll shoo it, I'll be bubbling, I'll be brewing, I'll get warm, I've been hot. Heaven's sake, is that a spot? Please, that, we want the company in France. We've got a lot to do. Is it one love or two? For you, our guest.
Be our guest.
Be our guest.
Be our guest. Be our guest. Be our guest. Come from that.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 30th of July, 2015. It was on this day, 1965, President Lyndon Johnson signed the Social Security Act, which created the Medicare and Medicaid programs, country's first national health insurance law. It's the birthday of the blues guitarist Buddy Guy, born Lettsworth, Louisiana, 1936, made his own guitar when he was 13, learned to play listening to the records of John Lee Hooker and others, started playing clubs in Baton Rouge, moved to Chicago in 1957. He was just 21 years old, and that's where Muddy Waters discovered him and took him under his wing. He was very popular in the 60s. He was a sideman for Howlin' Wolf, Little Walter, Coco Taylor. Eric Clapton said, "Buddy Guy was to me what Elvis was for others." But it bothered Buddy Guy that rock and roll stations would play an Eric Clapton version of a Muddy Waters song, but they would not play Muddy Waters himself. It was on this day in 1975 in Bloomfield Township, Michigan, near Detroit, that Teamsters leader Jimmy Hoffa disappeared. He'd been involved with the Teamsters from 1932 to 1975, been its president. He'd had ties to organized crime, went to jail. President Nixon commuted his sentence. And on this day in 1975, Hoffa told his friends he was going to meet with two mafia leaders at the Red Fox restaurant in Bloomfield Township. Police found his car hours later in the parking lot. No sign of Hoffa. His body has never been found. And it's the birthday of Emily Bronte, born Yorkshire, England, 1818, daughter of a clergyman, sister of Anne and Charlotte Bronte. Mother died of cancer when they were small children. Their father was a quiet, solitary man, spent much of his time in his room, and so the children learned to entertain themselves. They made up stories, made up a whole imaginary land, Angria. And when she was 29, Emily wrote Wuthering Heights. Here's a poem for today by Paul Hostofsky entitled U-Haul. I was glad to. After all, it would be just him and me in the cab, together for 8 whole hours, talking. He'd been away at college for 4 whole years, text messaging every now and then, and now I expected some full sentences. That was the deal. In return, we'd use my credit card, and I would drive him and all his worldly possessions home. Somewhere around Delaware, the mirror on the passenger side started turning inward against the wind, and I couldn't see, and it wouldn't stay when we opened the window and readjusted it. I told him to take off his shoes and give me his laces, and I'd pull over and tie the mirror to the antenna to keep it from drifting. He asked me why his shoes and not my shoes. It was a good question, the kind of question you might debate in a sociology class in college if you were still in college, but we were speeding down I-95 in a U-Haul with one functioning mirror, a resourceful father at the wheel, a credit card in his pocket, his thumbs keeping time to an old-fashioned song in his head that only he could hear, and a son drowning out that song now, turning the radio on loud, louder, silently bending down to untie his shoes. U-Haul, a poem by Paul Hostofsky from The Bad Guys, published by Future Cycle Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry App, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
Support for this station comes from the Diamond Park Aquatic Center, located at 3045 Riverside Drive in the Valley. July swim schedules are now available online at juno.org/parkrec. Diamond Park Aquatic Center is also offering swim lessons on Tuesdays and Thursdays and on Saturday mornings during the summer season. More information at 586-2782.
Well, thanks for staying with us on a Juno afternoon. Lori Scandling with you here, and in the studio is musician Tekla Waterfield, who will be performing this evening at 8:30 and tomorrow night at 9 downtown at the Rockwell. Tekla is a person who grew up in Juno for part of her life and who currently is working in the music scene in the Seattle area, and she's headed back to Southeast to perform here as well as at the Haines. Well, I should say the Southeast Fair. I always call it the Haines Fair, but it's the Southeast State Fair. Tekla, welcome. Glad to have you back.
Thank you.
In town. Would you start us off with a sample of your music and tell us what the song is?
Okay. So first of all, I'm playing a hollow body guitar, which I would normally have plugged in, so it might sound a little different than an acoustic guitar. I just really like the tone of this guitar, which is why I brought it. But it's tricky to play like in a situation like this. So we'll see how it sounds. The song that I'm going to play is called Can't Move On. I moved a lot as a kid. We moved all over Juneau the short time that we were here. And this song is kind of talking about what it feels like to be constantly moving.
Thank you for sharing that. That was lovely.
Thank you.
Before we went on the air, we were chatting a little bit about if you are making a living as a musician, which is a challenge. Talk a little bit about how you're putting it together in Seattle.
Okay, yeah. I love kids, and I love to write, and I love to sing, and I love to perform. So people have said, why don't you just start, you know, writing children's songs and going down that route? And it's not quite like that for me. But I do some teaching, which I was mentioning to you. There's some great programs in Seattle, one of which is the Rain City Rock Camp for Girls. And I just got to do a workshop just yesterday and last week as well, where we work with kids from 8 to 15 or 16 years old. Kind of teaching them how to be empowered and how to, it's the workshop's called Rock That Stage. So we do games and fun activities, and we discuss their fears and, you know, help them sort of, feel like they can get up on stage and have the tools they need. The other, teaching thing I do is with this, great group of Seattle musicians called the Bushwick Book Club. And they're a group of people that read books and then write songs, or sometimes it's comedians or skits or whatever, based on the book, and then we perform them around the city. It happens once a month. It's a lot of people are involved. There's like 200 different performers that rotate. But they also have this group called Style. It's Songwriting Through Youth Literature Education, and we do programs in the schools where we read children's books, and then we we coach the children on writing a song, and we play a song for them that we've written inspired by the book, and it's just a great way to kind of be doing all of these things that I love and kind of making it, you know, making ends meet.
And so, did you get involved in music as a child yourself?
I did, yeah. My mom, who at one point had us here, or we were living here in Juneau, played the folk festivals and was, you know, one of the jammers here in town. In fact, there's a mural on Gold Street, one of the houses there, and my mom is the cello painter in the mural. I had to go by there today and check it out because it's like it's just all the memories. I learned how to play, I don't know how to say this, Furelis on piano there when I was a little kid, that house. And so she took us, you know, we went on ferries, and my sister and I would sing a song or two with her and this troupe of people that she would travel with. And we would be able to, that would afford us to take the ferries, that we were the live entertainment on the ferry. And we would sing with her at folk festivals. We sang on the Haynes Fair stage when we were little kids, doing stuff like "When the red robin goes bop bop bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he starts sobbing that old sweet song." You know, just these, and like these fun like old Bill Stein, you know, just very traditional like folk songs. I mean, so we grew up around that. And then, you know, I always was like, I want to sing. But for a while there, I tried to be like, I have to have a serious career. And I just didn't do it for a while until, like, I was, like, physically aching and, like, almost crying when I would see other people perform, because it was, like, this thing in me that has to happen. I have to do it. So
you mentioned that one of your gigs is playing at SeaTac Airport.
Yes.
So
yes.
Talk a little bit about what your experience is there. Do people pay attention, or is it like
wallpaper?
It's
weird. It's a little weird. It's a little bit of both. And there's different locations within the airport, so it kind of depends on where you are and all of these factors, like the mood that you're in that day and all of these things. But the cool thing is that, I mean, it's a paid gig. I mean, and that's, you know, it's really awesome to be like, I'm writing, I have so many songs that I'm writing, and I now have a place, I have a platform where I can be encouraged to do them and supported by the community. Like, Seattle is, you know, very big on independent music and supporting that, and I just think it's so awesome to be there and be doing it, even if at times you're feeling like you're sort of like wallpaper in the background, you know. I mean, people are walking by, and you know, I don't want to be like, hey, look at me, I'm here, hello. It's, you know, it's like busking in a sense. But but they have you set up with a little PA, you know, and you have a microphone and a little mini stage, so you know, makes you feel a little bit more like you're, you know, a featured performer rather than a busker, which is, I mean, I'm not trying to put them down, because that is, I've bussed on the streets before, like at Pike Place
Market.
That's
hard work.
It's hard work.
Yeah. And are you finding plenty of gigs in clubs and elsewhere around the Seattle area?
Yeah.
Is it a big enough market that you think you can make it and make it as a musician?
I think that, you know, that's what I'm working on, and I think that there's a lot of opportunity, and it's sort of tapping into it and where you want to go with it, with what you want to do. I would love to be able to do the local stuff, but also be able to travel and do, you know, festivals and things like that, and kind of piece it all together. But I just recently played at a winery in Woodinville, and there's just like tons of them, and they have events all the time, and they need live music. And I mean, you know, there's the club gigs, I would say, you know, the traditional club gigs are the worst in terms of actually trying to make a living off of it, because they're, you know, it just often, unless you're paired up with like a really well-known nationally touring band, or if you're a really well-known, you know, it's harder when you're sort of, you know, trying to
make it on your own.
Make it on your own.
How would you describe your music, Tekla?
I would say it encompasses a very broad range of American music. It isn't strictly one genre or the other. I have always been a lover of many styles of music, and I think that I'm sort of still shaping it. I only in the last 3 years maybe really started to really start writing and just write, let it come out, and working on it. So I think it's still shaping. But the album that I'm working on has some soul. It has some country more, you know, not pure country, but feelings of country, feelings of folk, elements of there's even a couple songs that have more of a little bit of a funky feel to it. So, yeah, I think it's diverse.
Well, thank you for joining us today. We're talking with Tekla Waterfield. She spent part of her childhood in Juneau. She is performing this evening at Rockwell downtown at 8:30 and tomorrow night at the same venue at 9 o'clock for about 3 hours each of those performances. She will also be at the Haines/Southeast Alaska State Fair this weekend. And we're going to listen to a little bit more of her music on her CD. So I hope you have a great weekend and that people show up tonight.
Yeah.
Thanks
yeah.
for joining
Thank
us.
Thank you for having me.
It's good to be here.
Listening to Tekla Waterfield, who just was with us in the studio, and again, she's performing tonight and tomorrow night at Rockwell downtown. And with us, our regular Thursday afternoon guest, Nancy DeCherney from the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council, to talk about the art happenings around Juneau most immediately and also looking into next week. Nancy, I see you have a massive list with you, truly.
It just looks big.
A lot of double spacing there.
Yeah.
But,
no,
you know, I just remind folks, if you want to find out what's going on in Juneau, the jahc.org calendar is I'd recommend to anybody, visitor or local, look there if you want to see what the haps are in our busy community. So what's going on, Nancy?
Well, let's see. We got the last few days of Home Skillet Festival happening over in Sitka, by the way. I like to mention those sorts of things. This evening over at the Jack, it is an Alaska National Guard Day reunion. So if you are a Guard member, you're welcome to attend
that. What time is that?
That starts at 5:30, goes till 8:30. So
all former I guess former members of the Alaska National Guard.
Go check that out. And, of course, now the we're in fair season, so we had the Home Skillet Fair in Sitka, and now the Haines State Fair is beginning today.
Oh, right, Thursday.
Yeah, it goes through the weekend, and then tomorrow, Blueberry Festival in Ketchikan. So you can just fly all over Southeast Alaska having a fairly good time.
Yes. I heard that, I actually read our showery weather will improve to only scattered showers for the weekend.
Oh, wonderful.
So I'm quite heartened by that.
It's not raining at the moment. Oh. I would note that.
Thank you. Excuse me, I'm leaving the studio to go outside
and get in a little fresh air, yes. On Friday, we have Food Truck Fridays, and in a minute I'll remember who it was. I knew it as I was walking across the road, but we have a good lineup of really exciting people for this weekend. I think the Flustered Cluckers are on. And
for your live music on the inside.
And the East Kuwu Dancers are going to be performing. So there's a lineup of pretty exciting things happening, and we do that indoors most of the time.
It works well to grab some food from the trucks outside and then come in and sit down and be sheltered.
Yeah, and then there's all kinds of vendors and whatnot there. I just never know what's going to happen. So that makes it kind of exciting. Dan Hobson is up at the Gold Room, of course, with his guitar. He plays live guitar on the weekend up there. And Camp Damp is happening out at the Eagle River Methodist Camp.
It starts tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. All day, and I think they go all weekend.
And the fee includes food. I've looked at the website. This, I believe, is the 30th, 29th, or 30th Camp Damp, and it is a weekend-long event with callers and jam sessions focused around bluegrass and various teams of folks take turns making some wonderful homemade food.
And that's out at the Methodist camp, so it's not out in the woods, really.
What's the website for that?
It is junocontras.org.
Right.
So you can go there and get all the rest of the information.
Junocontras.org. Thank you.
So Saturday morning, bright and early at 7:30 a.m., you can get up and do the Ockman Triathlon.
We had a guest talk with us about that.
So that starts at UAS campus, and you need to register by tomorrow, so if you're interested. There's a draw open studio at the Canvas. Canvas has got a lot of really cool stuff going on, so go to their website and check those out. There is a Skipper's Choice race, the Seas Cup race, starting at Marmion Island in Douglas. So if you want more information about that, that's seasailing.us. There is Bound and Plain, a 2-day workshop at the Canvas about, I think they're going outside to paint. They're at 10 o'clock on Saturday, Common Kings at Suite 907. They've had a real lineup of musicians out there lately.
They have the last few weeks. And that's, Nancy, 10 p.m., not 10 a.m.
Oh, 10 p.m. Did I say a.m.?
No, you did not, but I always think, can I stay up that late?
No. Way past my bedtime. Now, if they would have it at early in the morning,
we could
go.
I was thinking 10 a.m.
We could do it.
I'd be very up for dancing at that time.
On Sunday, it's the weekly ukulele jam over at TK McGuire's. And there's international folk dancing, and, of course, the festivals all over town or southeast, so do that. On Monday, the Tlingit Language Learners, I like to remind people about that. It's in the downtown public library in the big room, and it's free. Goldtown is showing Walking in Two Worlds, a film, and there's a theater in the Wild Youth Camp that Perseverance Theater is doing, and you can register for that by calling them or going onto their website. And I think that goes all week long. I think Shona was in talking about
that. She was. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She visited with us last week.
So on Wednesday, we have something exciting. Besides a Wild for Conservation 5K Airport Dyke Trail run at 5 p.m., Tutinov, Alexander Tutinov, is in town, and he is doing a piano concert at the Northern Light United Church at 7 p.m.
Next Wednesday.
People love having him come and perform. He's not only a fine musician, but a very funny person. So the concert's always really entertaining and quite good. So let's see, there's a Cajun Country Revival at the Alaskan Hotel Bar on Wednesday night also. And that brings us to Thursday, and then we'll be ready for First Friday next week. A couple of things coming up. August 12th through 14th is a summer string workshop with master teachers Tracy Helming and Rajan. I don't even want to mention Krishnaswamy.
I think that is correct.
Okay.
Yes.
This is Jazz and Classics bringing this workshop, and I believe that those two instructors are going to do a tiny little pop-up concert somewhere along the way as well. But if you're interested in taking any of these three-day workshops for violin, viola, or cello, you should register at Juno Jazz and Classics. And speaking of Juno Jazz and Classics, Pink Martini tickets go on sale to the public on Saturday. I know we've been getting phones ringing off the hook over there. People want to buy their Pink Martini tickets, and you need to be a donor to Jazz and Classics in order to buy them now. Reggie's in her office standing by. In case you need to get your Pink Martini ticket while we're talking here.
Let's talk about First Friday. It's just over a week away. Hard to believe July is just about past.
Yes.
What will be happening over at the Jack? Do you have a featured artist?
We do. Fumi Matsumoto and Jane Terry, they frequently exhibit together, and they have their exhibit is called Happy Trails, and it's quite interesting. Whenever they do a show together, it's quite interesting. It's never the same stuff. You can't ever quite predict. So I would just recommend it. The photos that I've seen of this exhibit are just lovely and whimsical and lots of fun. And then you can come and get your little booklet, your little map.
That map is very helpful.
Yeah, so you can get that and go around. I think there'll be quite a few other things happening. We did release the wearable art dates, and theme this year is going to be reflections, and Flordolino Longandino is going to do the directing again, and we'll have more information about when you need to be registered and all that sort of stuff on our website pretty soon.
And I noticed the dates are Valentine's Day, the 13th and 14th.
Yeah,
so be thinking about that.
Great Valentine's gift for the person that you're
Talk with. A little bit for just a moment, Nancy, about this theme, Reflections. You developed it. How did that come about?
Well, picking the theme has always been like a big problem for wearable art. We never know exactly how to come up with it, and we get ideas from people, and often I kind of rely on the designers to decide what they would like to have a theme. But
you mean the participants?
No, the people who have to do the stage setting. I figure if they are inspired by it, then that's the right thing because they'll do what. But we didn't have designers selected yet for this, and we were struggling. And I was walking across the bridge. You know those perfect days when it's crystal clear and the channel is flat calm?
I always say smooth as silk on those days.
It was gorgeous, and the mountains were just all reflecting, and I thought, Reflections, we could do a lot with that. So when I mentioned that to Flordolino, he's in a play, and he immediately came with this response from a quote from the play that he's in about reflections, and we just thought, it's probably a really lovely thing that people can do. You know, you can do mirror images, you can do thoughtful things, you can do harmonics.
Absolutely,
you can
just crazy out of this world things, which is the point.
That's the point. Do whatever. And you don't have to do any of it at all. You can just come or just do whatever. It's just a guide.
It's
just
a fantastic spectacle, regardless of the theme. Well, Nancy, thank you for joining us. We're talking about what's happening in our busy and fun community over the next week with Nancy DeCherney of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. By the way, tomorrow on a Juno afternoon, which Andy Klein will host, we'll get details about pianist Alexander Tutinov's upcoming classes and performances. Matt Robus and Jerry Burnett will be here with details of this year's Golden North Salmon Derby. Craig Millard of the Flustered Cluckers will be here with a preview of their Food Truck Friday performance. And you'll hear from Allison Gillum and Amanda Pilley from the Southeast Alaska Land Trust. That's tomorrow. Thanks for joining us today.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast.